Eit, mae rhaid ar eich newig mae'r i'n swyni, na na'n swyni mae'r sfer angen i yn ar dra, be ar dra. Ac ys na'n, when I finished the last day, we started on about herbal remedies and wee cures and all that.
Yeah.
Would you like to go through some of the remedies, Nan? You knew a lot of stuff.
Well, when I was young, the country was full of people, old and young, and the hospitals were half empty because none of the old people had been in hospitals. And well, when they got an illness of any kind, they tried all sorts of home remedies before they called the doctor, because everybody didn't have the half crown. Now, the half crown was 1/8 of a pound. I couldn't convert it now into the euro money, but I'd say it would be only a few cents, but they just didn't have it.
It was a lot of money then.
It was a lot of money. Yeah. And so they had tried all the home remedies. First, they had nothing now for pneumonia. A lot of men died young with pneumonia in them days, because they were out working either as servant boys or working for themselves, and got a lot of wettings, bad cold weather.
Yeah.
And they had no way of drying the clothes, and they had no change of clothes, and they'd have to put them wet clothes on again the next day. So they didn't have any. There was no cure except plasters the doctor put on, poultices.
That helped a wee bit, now, like
that. It helped. Well, it cured in some cases, but there was a lot of widows left with young families. My own grandmother, her husband, she had 12 children, and her husband died before the last was born with pneumonia. And then I had an uncle died in later years. He was a postman, because they didn't have the money to bring in a doctor until it was too late. He died with a quinsy, a throat infection. I don't know what they used to call it, a quinsy. He died, it burst, the abscess on the throat burst, and he got poison. He was only in his 20s. That was quite a common thing.
I know, at the time.
Yeah, at that time, yes. Yeah. Well, measles was never regarded as life-threatening in them days, the way they are now, and nobody hardly ever called a doctor. The early signs would be they'd be dull and lack energy, and then one day the child woke up in a sweat. And the important thing was to get the rash out within 24 hours. So they were put into a very warm bed with a lot of bed clothes. The windows blinded. They were put in there to the dark. And they were kept in there. And there was a bunch of nettles would be taken in, washed and boiled nettles to make nettle tea.
Was that supposed to cure?
That was to take out heat.
All right.
That took out the rash. You see, the rash had to come out and go back again inside of the 24 hours. So they made the nettle tea, and that was given to the patient several times a day. On the second day then of the measles, the rash came out, and on the third, it was going right the third day that it went back. They went back in again, and the child was fine. But the parents didn't want to be going on and on with this for weeks on end, so what they would do was they would put other members of the family into the bed with them to try to get them to have it all at the one time, to get it over with, maybe within a week. I myself was put in, I was put twice, well, I lived alone, I had nobody with me myself. But I was put into neighbours' beds a couple of times to try to get it, because there was always the danger that if you got it in adult life, that it could be very dangerous. It was never considered any problem for children. But I didn't get them till I was over 50. And by that time, of course, they had tablets and they had things that they had by that time. I was over 50 when I got. My I have a daughter, two of my daughters, never got them yet. And one of my daughters got them the week she was doing her inter-cert, and the son got them around the same time. So we never seemed to be able to get them as children. Mumps, they came every few years too. There was a swelling in the neck glands, and that affected the movement of the jaws and so on. So the cures for that was a stocking was filled with warm salt and pinned round the neck, and the same cure was used for sore throats. Chicken pox was another ailment that they had. It was never done any harm. It was just a dirty looking rash, and it usually went away with in a few days. It would be washed with water with some baking soda, and then baking soda would be smeared over it, and so it was gone in a few days. The whooping cough, it was a serious ailment. It was a deep, hard cough, and they would run. The cure now for the whooping cough, breastfed babies rarely got it, but after that, the best cure was donkey's milk. They would go miles to get it. It depended the time of year. Donkeys usually have their foals in the late spring and early summer, so sometimes it would be very hard. You'd have to go a long way to get a donkey that would still have milk. Donkey's milk was the main cure for that. And goat's milk was for eczema and asthma. For diarrhea, boiled milk with ginger added, really bad. But boiled milk with browned flour. The flour would be browned on a pan, and that was put in. But if that failed, there was one really good one, which I had it myself, and one year for diarrhea, that the diarrhea was rampant in the country. And in later years, I used it for my own children. And that was an iron of any description, a poker, would be put into the fire till it would be red. And then it would be dipped in the milk, and the milk would all start to bubble, and it would all get dirty looking. But that dirty dust that was on it was actually iron. That was the iron coming off the iron when it was heated, and that was
that cured.
It was that iron that cured it. The milk then was stirred, you see, with this red poker. And this smutty thing, that was the cure. But it was also given, and I give it myself, to calves that would have a scour. That's before we had vets or had chemist shops to get these things in. I give it often to calves. So constipation, that was then on the opposite side. That was done when you're churning the milk. When it would, before it would turn into butter, it would be all wee grainy things, you know, the milk. That was the cure for that.
For constipation.
Constipation, yes. Yes. Yeah. It was wee pinheads, and they were taken out then. And what else now was used?
Do you remember you mentioned the last day, the warts cures you had? Tell me about the wart, anyway, the cure.
A snail was supposed to be one of them, and you let the snail crawl over the wart, and it left that slime, sort of slimy thing behind it. And then when that was done, that snail was taken, and he was hung on a gooseberry bush, and it's a kind of a pish rug more than anything else. And according to as the snail died out and deteriorated,
the wart vanished.
Mm. And another one then, sounds silly, you took a piece of your own. When a funeral was passing, you got a cut a piece of clothing that you were wearing, your own wearables clothes, and a piece of your petticoat or whatever, and you rubbed it on the wart, and you threw the wart in the direction where the funeral was going, in that direction, and you walked a few paces after the funeral, and it was said then that the corpse took the wart with them to the grave. But oh, there was another one, I can't now think about it at the moment. I might think about it later.
Yeah, but then you had a lot of pishragi anyway, Nan, you know, you listened to the stories as well.
Aye, yeah.
Do you want to tell me some of them? Like,
well, there was the one about bed sores. I remember when my grandmother was laid up in bed for a while, she developed a bed sore, and an old man came in one evening. He had a few drinks taken, it was a fair evening, he had been in town, and he came in and he heard about this, so he said, give me a spade. And he went out to the field and he cut what we would call a scra, a big sod with the grass growing on it, took it in on the spade, and he put it in under the bed. That was supposed to be a cure. So, well, that was the only one now in that line. Now, children that would have trouble with what we call now nappy rashes. There was no nappies then. People didn't have nappies. They just had rags and pieces of cloth of any kind. But what's known now as a nappy rash, spring water from a spring well, would be bathed in that and left to dry. It wouldn't be dried off, left to dry naturally. And the spring water was supposed to be the best cure for that. And what else? Cuts. Dog. You got the dog to lick it. And
that was a cure.
You have the dog to lick it, and a very good one, and has been used up to recently, up before there was rubber gloves or anything. A lot of fishermen would get gashes on their hands from handling the nets and handling things out at sea. So urine, your own urine, was the cure for that. You just made a wee piddle in the palm of your hand and rubbed it on it. My neighbour, who has just retired, he had been a skipper on a boat for years and years, and he said they'd done that, and some even never could get used to wearing rubber gloves. They would have to do the things with the bare hands, and they were still using it. And a cobweb. They'd go to an outhouse where there'd be big cobwebs hanging down from the beams, put a cobweb over it. That was cured.
That cured as well.
Yeah.
And the holy wells as well, Nan, you have stories about them.
I think it was one of the last ones, the holy... Oh, I had a lot down here about the pharmacies and all that, you know. Yeah, well, they used to make a pilgrimage to the Doon Well, that's down Kilmacrennan area.
Yeah,
the Doon Well. And that was supposed to have been blessed by St. Colum Kell. Oh, they came from far away on carts and traps, sidecars, horseback, they came every way to it. Oh, they came from other counties to it. And when I visited the first time myself, there was a lot of crutches, old crutches. They were eaten with moth-eaten. They were just nearly, they were only dust really, but that was ones that were supposed to have been left behind by people who came on crutches and went home cured. That was at the Doon Well. And there was lots of other wells people went to. There's St. Catherine's Well in Killybegs, but I never heard so much about cures. The Turris was done round these places, and they said, whatever prayers, but they had great faith in it. They would leave the night before and they would fast all the way on the journey, and they would do the Turris, and they wouldn't eat till they came back home again, whatever distance it would be.
Their faith often cured them anyway.
It was the faith that cured them. Well, then there was a lot of those priests. Then was in every diocese, I think we still have that. The priests are supposed to have cures. People went to them. They were gifted with healing, and they went to them and got cured. Now there's still a priest way down the country. I think Father Sweeney. I have salt that I was given. That I think it was a Father Sweeney that blessed. It's supposed to be.
And where is he? Which diocese?
Oh, the diocese of Rafo, down on the way in the Rosses district now, but I forget now exactly where. Where was it at all? No, I'm not too sure now. But somebody gave me the salt that they had blessed. There was the people too then, people that had cures. And the parish that you went to. Now they, well, we all know about the seventh son of the
seventh son.
Yeah. But there was others. Child born after the father died. The father had died before the child was born. That they had the cure of what was then called the foul mouth. It would be now kind, I don't know what would be the right name of it now, and it was something that came on the inside of their mouth, and they went and they rubbed their tongue against the person that would have it, that, and it was a cure. And what else? There was some other cure. There was a family then, McCahill's blood. I got that cure myself for shingles. It was some family, and it was round from family to family. I went for it myself, and this man went in, and he had a syringe, and he took a bit of blood out of himself somewhere, went into another room, and he came out, and over the area that I was affected and where I had the pain, he rubbed it all over, like scribbled it, scribbling away over it. So yes, it was a help. That
handed down from
generation. Yeah, handed down. That was handed down. But it only followed in the mail.
Yeah.
The males of the house. Of the.
But would priests believe in that type of stuff?
A lot. Not at all. They didn't want anybody to go for cures at all. But it was often said that they went themselves. When push came to shove, that they went and got cures themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that has the cures would tell you that they had especially the seventh son thing, that they had done it for priests. And baking soda, that was a cure for if you got pains or heartburn or bloated in any way. Trapped wound, like, or gas, a teaspoon of baking soda and a glass of water. And we had a doctor here, Dr. Boyle, and in later years when everybody was getting tablets or any kind of tablets at all, he always said to put a little soda into the water that you took with your tablet, that it done something in the stomach, whatever it was. It neutralised something. I don't know, but I always done it. I still do it. Pinch of baking soda.
Well, I mentioned the priests, but maybe as well doctors. Did they give in to, you know, people being cured with old remedies and all that? Would doctors, would they agree to it? Like,
I don't think they would have.
Not all of them anyway. No.
I don't think so. Well, and then of course in the time before my time, nobody ever went into hospitals for confinement, for having their babies. No. They were all at home. And there was a time in my aunt's time and that they didn't even have a resident midwife, nurse, you see. And it was just a neighbour. My grandmother, as I say, had 12 children, and every one of them was delivered by a neighbour. But if there was complications, they would send for the doctor. And if there was no money, The doctors used to, we were used to supply a doctor, our doctor, with milk, so I knew him very well. And he used to tell us that when he would be in attending the patient, delivering the baby and whatever, somebody would be outside, maybe the man of the house or somebody else, and they would be out swinging a good fat hen or a cockerel outside for to hang it up, for to give to the doctor when he was going home. That was, he said, they would have poultry for chicken for dinner several days a week, and that's where it came from. That was the payment.
Yeah. Well, there was little money then, there was, so
yes.
There was too scarce, like.
Oh, yes. And my father earned about, what was it, a shilling a day mowing, and that would be from morning. Mm. That would be easily a 12-hour day. And the people who smoked the pipe in them days, there were threepence taken off it. They would only get 9 pence because of the time that would be wasted
smoking.
They would get less pay.
My God.
If you were caught.
Now, and tell me about the day you did your first communion.
My first communion?
Yeah.
Well, I was near enough the chapel now to walk to the chapel. I lived near enough to it, but a lot of others came in on donkey carts and horse carts and that. And, we were dressed with our white dresses and wreaths and veils. And now, in my particular case, my teacher lived in the town. And when the Mass was over, she invited us to her house. And she sent our mother, whoever would be with us, there'd be only one person with us, the mother or the father would be at home, mine or somebody else, there'd be just one. And she invited us in for tea and buns. There was a baker, man who used to do baking out in his own yard, and the baker, and she would sit up there for curd and buns, and homemade jam she'd have, and that was our treat. And we went home. I think I had somebody give me a shilling, which was a big lot of money at that time. And somebody else, what else did I get? Well, that's about all now. That's all. Shilling. Something
else. Well, simple, wasn't it?
Simple. And a lot of people wouldn't, you see, they were examined on the day before, the Friday before it, they'd be examined. And they wouldn't buy the outfit for them, as if they had to buy one. But they were mostly handed down, and from mm-hmm. one sibling to sibling, the girls. And the boys' things, they'd always buy for them. But you'd get them from cousins and so on. But they wouldn't buy them until they would, in case they wouldn't pass the examination that they were examined before. Day before, and in case they didn't pass, they wouldn't buy. Go to the shops then and get it. So that's what's the.
You had a few pennies to buy sweeties and.
Yours were very little pennies now, going very little. Now, but the others, that was because our teacher lived in the town, but the others that didn't have that, they just got into their carts and went home and had their breakfast, took off their finery and had their breakfast, and that dress would be kept there might be a Corpus Christi procession later in that was in June or the end of May or something, I forget when it was. They would wear it at that and be kept in for the next girl in the family, or be given to somebody else, would be passed on. Nothing was wasted.
What about your wedding day? Weddings were short as well, and there was no big fuss like the
wedding. Oh, not at all, no. Well, we were, in my time, you got married at 8:30 Mass in the morning. So you went then. Now, times before that, they came home to the bride's house and there would be some neighbours there and would prepare a wedding breakfast. But now at my time, that was 57, people were going to hotels. So I remember going, but now there was just rashers and, I think, and eggs. Sausages weren't very much on the menu at that time at all. And then after that, there'd be always some drinks. And they went to Donegal Town was the place they went.
Right.
The weddings were small now.
Just a small family group.
A small family or a few neighbours.
Yeah.
Parents, in a lot of cases, the parents didn't go at all. The parents were at home. And when the marriage was over and the breakfast was over in this place, then the bride and groom went to out to the parents' home and give them a drink, and there'd be neighbours in with them and go around the neighbourhood and give them a drink. And then back in around about 12 or 1 o'clock, they headed then for Donegal. It was always up to the Abbey. That was Breslin's, we called it at that time. That was who owned it. And somebody in the crowd would have a camera, and they'll take some photographs, and that's all.
So you went to Donegal Town as well?
Everybody nearly did. Yeah. They went to Donegal Town, and on in the evening, where they would have drinks and stuff of that. Now, I don't know how that somebody bought them. Were just having drinks round among themselves. But in the evening, then there was what was called a join, and that was a collection for money to have tea. Everybody, the bride and groom, they didn't have to pay anything, but all the others would throw into it whatever, a couple of shillings or whatever they put into it, and then there would be tea served about 4 or 5 o'clock. And, there was nothing fancy about it, tea and bread and butter and jam, and I don't remember now anything. Might be a bit of ham, I'm not sure now, I can't now, it's a long time ago, it's over 50 years ago. But that was the general rule,
yeah.
And very, very few. Some might go to Dublin for a few days for a honeymoon, but a lot never went anywhere.
Unheard of, really. Like.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It was often happened that the groom would stay in the bride's house for a few days until she got her things together to come to the home. He would be coming mostly to the home that he would have inherited, and his father and mother might be there, most likely just the mother. This.
Did that apply in your own case, Nan?
Well,
you
no.
Moved to this house, like?
No, yes, but not immediately, because my aunt that reared me, she was widowed at that time and she was blind, so I had to stay with her for a while. We kind of worked between that house and this house. So eventually we persuaded her to come with us here. And it took a lot of persuasion. She didn't want to leave her own home. And so then I was landed with her in her late 80s. And my father-in-law was near 90. He was in the late 80s too. And I had them here while my children were born, and we had very little space, very, very little. And I had to look after them. There were nobody sent to hospitals or homes in them days. I looked after them here till they died. And it was the normal thing, and you just done it.
Just got on with it, Liz.
Yeah. When people then got sick, neighbours would come in to sit up at night with them. They would never leave them alone, because would be a terrible slur to anybody to have their people dying, as they said, without coal or candle. So the light didn't go out while a person was sick, and the fire didn't go out, and there would be neighbours come in and they would stay to mourn, and to let the people of the house give them a rest and let them go to bed.
Yeah.
And that's how it was done.
Well, people were dependent on each other, like, and they were very helpful.
And as I said, the doctor then, at that stage, the doctors in some cases dependent on the ailment. The doctor would come out every 2 or 3 days a week to see the patient, but no doctor ever came to my people here because they were just old age. I never remember seeing a doctor in this house.
See, this area here, was this a big fishing area? This, and you pronounce it better than I do. Bea. Why is it called that?
Well, we don't know. Some will tell you that it's because that in the time that this country was all a forest, that it was covered with, that it was over, all beech trees grew here.
I don't know now.
And then, strange, when you dig deep down into the soil, you come on gravel and sandy thing that's very like what you get on the beach. So I don't know now. Nobody knows. They all make out that it's to do with the beech trees.
The beech tree, yeah, beech, probably is.
Yeah, B-E-A-G-H.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And was it, you're near to the sea, was it fishing mostly that, you know, your neighbours were doing fishing like to...
No, I don't think not so very much now. The salmon fishing in the summertime would be the main thing. That's in my time.
Mm-hmm.
They would be 6 weeks or eight, whatever. Now they were allowed to go out. They were had a license mm-hmm. to go out
Did
to
it,
fish
yeah.
for salmon at that time. But that was it. The boats were put in then. Any fishing after that would be illegal, and you would be. And of course, poaching on the river. The O'Neill River, it was a great river of salmon at that time, and the country was full of young men, had no work and nothing to do. They used to be out poaching and then selling the salmon to visitors. I remember though you could buy a salmon for 2 shillings, but then you had no, it put me off salmon altogether because we had neighbours and they used to come with salmon too often. And we had no, you would have salmon for dinner and tea and supper and all, and it really put me off salmon.
It would.
Yes, I still buy and eat trout, but I'm not keen on salmon at all. I just got too much of it. See, we had no way, you had to cook it and eat it all the time.
But emigration was common, like a lot
The emigration, sure, there were people leaving every week. Now there was 4 in this family, my husband's family, and they were all gone. One went to America, he died, he's buried in America, and the other 2 girls, they went to England, and one of them is already buried in England, and the other one will be as well. You know, like out of the whole family of 4, in many cases a family maybe of 8 or 10, just 1 was buried in Ireland or here at home. We're all buried in foreign places.
Sad that, really, you know, people just leaving home and never returning in a lot of cases, like.
Yeah.
You've thought more about the warts.
I thought about it because there was another cure, was lean bacon. It would be used instead of the snail. Well, that's about the only other one now that I remember. Lean bacon would be put on the wart and put bandaged over and kept on it overnight. That was just another one.
That healed,
Rag of the gap. An epileptic fits, the cure they had for that, I saw this done myself, would be to throw something over the person that couldn't be counted. That is, it could be anything. You could run, if you were in the house and you had nothing else, you could run for a handful of sugar, or rice, or if you're out, sand, or even a piece of soil, anything that couldn't be counted.
Oh, right. So throw it over. I understand now. Yeah. I was confused there for a minute. But just throw it over.
Throw it over the parent. Yes, was supposed to be to help the
epileptic.
Yes.
What about the bog bean then?
Well, the bog bean grew at a plant with a broad leaf and big long joints on it. It was a creeping thing and a lot of knots on it, joints, and it grew in the water holes or streams, but it would be in boggy land. And brown water. Now, what does she call that water? I forget now. But anyhow, and pulled that out and washed it and boiled it and bottled it in 5-negging bottles. And then in the springtime, it was given to every member of the family. They were given, I suppose, maybe every day a small amount of it.
Yeah.
That was for to clear the blood and to help with pimples, acne, and all them things. And people coming home on holiday from America, emigrants coming back for a holiday, you know, they used to take a bottle of that with them.
What's them?
They used to take it back to, they used to be taken to America.
But it was very hard to drink then, wasn't it?
It was very bad. Yeah.
Next to impossible. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, we had to drink it. We were meant to drink it.
Oh, I drank it when I was young.
Yeah.
But my mother used to put treacle through it, I think.
No, well, I got nothing through it. I had to drink it as it was. So,
do you believe, Nan, in the banshee?
I don't. I heard stories about them.
Yeah.
I do not know. No. And I heard no want of stories about ghosts, even from people now that very reliable people like that wouldn't be making up stories.
Yeah.
And my uncle told me that he was coming home away visiting his sister. She lived a good distance away, coming on the Glenties Road. It was a moonlight night. And coming on the Glenties Road, this person, he thought he heard a step first, walked on the side of the road beside him. And he knew it wasn't it was some kind of a spirit. And she walked for about 10 minutes or so, and then she suddenly disappeared. And he came home, now I heard this from, and he came home and his wife said that he came in and he was pale and frightened, and he said that his sister that was in America, he said she walked part of the road with him.
With him?
Aye, and went on the Glenties Road, and she was very disturbed and he never slept, and it came to pass that that was the night she died. She died in America. Now, that was the nearest thing I would have got to it, because he wouldn't be a person that would...
No, you know he told you the truth.
He told the truth from what he saw.
Yeah.
So, of course, I don't know, but I had no experience in all my life myself about anything. No,
but some people get, you know, that type of things. Some don't.
I have a friend, a priest, he's in Texas now, and he believes in all this. He believed... Ah, yes, Peter.
Yes.
This man is from the...
Right, they're gone now anyway. Tell me about the poaching, Nan.
Well, the poaching is, to this day, people will swear by it. I know people, wherever they get it, for rheumatism, sciatica, poaching.
It was supposed to be the best of all, wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
And just whiskey was used for sore breasts for young mothers, and what else?
Was a lot of poaching made at that time?
Oh, it must have been, yes.
Yeah.
It was. There was none made quite close to here now made. Uh-huh. No, it wasn't. But it was made.
But illegal and then
garlic. Oh,
yes.
Yeah. and something else crossed my mind. I can't remember now. I was going to say something else there.
Doesn't matter. Maybe we'll leave it today, Nan, because you're just out of hospital and it wasn't right, really.
Well, you got a good bit of stuff.
I did, yeah. We did most of the herbal stuff and the shrugy and everything.
Yeah, yes.